Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. About to switch our conversation up here. Not switch up. We're going to start our conversation off this hour with a hurricane that we just faced. Clearly, there is no place else to begin a program today after what's happened on the East Coast. This particular storm, Sandy, that hit us all is one of the largest in history. It stretched about 1,100 miles from end to end. 107 people at least perished, not in the United States of America, but across, everyone who was hit by this from the West Indies to here. 8 million customers still have no electricity, covering 18 states from Maine to Virginia. That was at midday today. And half of those were in New York and New Jersey. So it's a pretty frightening episode that just occurred. We're very lucky here in Baltimore, where we are broadcasting from, much easier than we thought getting through this. However, we will hear from Robert Gould at the end of this particular part of our program to talk about what the local BG&E are doing to restore power to those people who did lose power and where that stands. And before we get into our conversation with Patrick Michaels and Mike Tidwell on the role that climate change has played in this, we're going to talk to Scott Dance, who is the Baltimore Sun science reporter. And Scott, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
So tell us about this storm. Give us the kind of the rundown of what people actually experienced and where this came from and how it affected this community here.
Okay, well, it started as a Caribbean sort of system that only a few models thought would really come up this way. A lot took it out to sea before it ever affected the U.S., but of course, those models that were in the minority turned out to be the right ones. And, yeah, I mean, it affected the Carolinas. It affected, like you said, all the way up the East Coast to, you know, New York and Maine. And it had a massive footprint of hurricane force and tropical storm force winds. I saw some satellite images comparing it to Irene, and like you were saying, it's just it completely dwarfed Irene, and somehow it ended up, at least in Maryland, the power outages weren't as bad as in Irene. I've been here in Ocean City since Sunday, and it was definitely a sight to see here, something I never thought I'd see with my own eyes, or feel the power of the winds, the impact of all the flooding, both the ocean and the bay side here in Ocean City were, just the roughest I've ever seen, with my own eyes, for sure.
Very quickly, Scott, I mean, just to talk about what you're seeing in Ocean City and what the level of destruction is.
I would say, it's not like a lot of structural damage. Like, the winds definitely blew off some, shingles and that sort of thing. And there's, from the heavy surf, there's just, debris everywhere, near the coastlines, both sides of the island here. Other than that, the storm surge was the biggest concern on the bay side. There was flooding, depending on where you were, it was going pretty far to the east, from Assawoman Bay. And so a lot of properties there right along the bay were definitely inundated with several feet of water. The town officials here haven't come up with an estimate of damage yet, but it's really all up and down on the bay side. The flooding was just pretty brutal, and then on the beach, there's just massive erosion that's going to have to be repaired.
So so you've stationed yourself. Nobody was killed there, but you've been there since the beginning of this, and we know the pier fell and all the other things that happened there. But this struck the coast, and we're going to get into it with our guest coming up in a moment. But this struck the coast pretty heavily. Up and down. And have you been able to travel up to Delaware and beyond and below and see what happened?
Not yet. Yeah, I'm trying to get up to Delaware to check on a family friend's house in a little bit, actually, once I'm done with all this and have my story filed for tomorrow's paper. But, a lot of people concerned about the impact. I know in Delaware, the road impacts are a lot worse. The Delaware Inlet Bridge is closed. I think it's covered with like 3 to 4 feet of sand, and a lot of Route 1 is closed in Delaware. So, yeah, I know that they're dealing with it pretty bad up there. And then Assateague, not as much, structure and property there, obviously, to be damaged, but certainly, animals and all that. A lot of the dunes were really worn down there from what I've heard.
So so now, what do you know about what is about the cleanup now? Before we turn to our other guests, about the cleanup that's going on, and how many people are without power on the Eastern Shore, Ocean City, where all that is at the moment?
Yeah, Ocean City really didn't have a lot of power outages. When I checked last night, it was about 6,000, but a lot of them were sort of preemptive. Delmarva Power turned off the power to, I guess, sort of protect other parts of the grid. Eastern Shore, Chrisfield is definitely becoming a bigger concern than anywhere else in the state right now. I think we have a reporter going there tomorrow, but they are, still dealing with really high waters, and each tidal cycle is bringing, the same worries about, high water.
Scott, this has been, I appreciate your reporting. You do a lot of hard work. You were in the midst of the storm. I know that was very tough. And I thank you for all that you do, and look forward to getting you on the air here in the next week to talk a bit more about this at length.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Scott Dance, Baltimore Sun Science reporter, giving a sense of what's been going on here and what this storm was about. We are going to turn to what is behind this storm. I think most scientists in America and around the world are seeing what is happening with climate change, the heating up of the oceans. And while most would agree that this hurricane, Sandy, or any hurricane, is not because of climate change, clearly what's happening around the world now and what we're seeing in our coastal areas is the canary in the coal mine for many. We are joined here by Mike Tidwell, director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, and Patrick Michaels, senior research fellow for research and economic development at George Mason University. And we want to welcome you both, Mike and Patrick. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
410-319-8888 is the number here. We want you to join us for this conversation and be part of this conversation, talk a bit about what we're learning about all of this. But let me start, Mike. A lot of people who argue saying this wasn't climate change talk about the hurricanes and other kind of catastrophic weather occurrences have occurred all through the history of our planet. Before and after humankind took its hold. But there's something else going on here and that many people are talking about now. And talk about that and what you think, what do you think the relationship was between these hurricanes we're seeing, this particular kind of episode and climate change?
Well, we all know our planet is warming. Even the former skeptics and deniers, most of them have now come to agree that the polar ice caps are melting, that the oceans are warming, that sea level rise is happening. We now know that extreme weather is accelerating, and this is not coming just from scientists anymore. It's coming from insurance companies. Allstate Insurance Company in 2006 announced that it would stop insuring new homeowners in the easternmost part of Maryland precisely because of storms like Sandy that are becoming more frequent. That's Allstate Insurance Company that announced that in 2006. So they're not a Republican corporation. They're not a Democratic corporation. They're a corporation. And they're, even the insurance industry now is stating that extreme weather is happening. It's causing more damage. It's related to climate change. It's related to our increasing use of fossil fuels, oil, coal, and natural gas. And if you warm the oceans, hurricanes get their strength from warm sea surface temperatures. The North Atlantic temperatures that influenced Hurricane Sandy were about 5 degrees Fahrenheit higher than normal. And this is the kind of thing that you would expect to see with climate change. It fits the chain, the pattern that we're seeing with more extreme Atlantic storms. It came ashore with the lowest barometric pressure recorded for a landfalling Atlantic hurricane that far north. It had the largest wind field, as you mentioned, over 1,000 miles in diameter. So the fingerprints of something unusual clearly are all over this storm. I think it's the wrong question to ask, was this caused by climate change? Did global warming cause Sandy? That's the wrong question to ask. It's, does this fit the pattern that we've been seeing? The answer to that is yes. And this is one more storm for climate scientists to add to their data.
So Patrick Michaels, I mean, that clearly I know that you don't think that climate change does not exist, and but you don't think that climate change has a role in these expanding weather catastrophes we're having?
Well, first of all, I have to add something on my attribution. I am director for the Center of the Study of Science at the Cato Institute, and I'm not really very active at George Mason, so my day job is here at Cato.
Okay, sorry about that. Go ahead.
One of the things that we want to look at in science when people make hypothetical statements is to test them. I'm looking at my computer screen at something called the Hurricane Power Dissipation Index, and there is a related index called the Accumulated Cyclone Energy Index. This is a measure of the integrated power of tropical cyclones, both in the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere, and summed up around the planet. If you look at the power dissipation index values, recent values, say 1910 through 1912, they're at or near their lowest, did you hear me? Lowest values since reliable records began with the advent of satellite sensing of tropical cyclones in the early 1970s. Another index of unusual weather is done by our National Climatic Data Center. It's called the Climate Extremes Index. And yes, that has been going up for the last few decades. It has gone up and is now at the values that it was at in the early part of the 20th century, before we had put very many greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. So you have to be very careful. Now, what juiced Sandy? Well, I'll tell you, that's a very interesting thing. There was a very strong trough in the jet stream moving down from Canada. That's a wintertime phenomenon. And that supplied a lot of additional upward motion that allowed the storm to spread out and maintain a very low barometric pressure. When the trough finally interacted with the storm, as the storm was coming ashore, there was another jump or a drop in the barometric pressure, meaning an increase in the overall strength of the storm. But in fact, what was moving that storm was not a warm weather phenomenon as much as the energy from the trough. That's a winter phenomenon. The same thing happened with Hurricane Hazel in 1954, although it didn't produce snow, but it did produce major flooding in Toronto, Canada, with high winds. And that's when people realized the jet stream can actually juice tornadoes, juice hurricanes in a very winter-like, even though that's a winter-like phenomenon. And we go back to 1804, and we can see the famous snow hurricane of 1804. So, yeah, these things happen. Can't rely on one event, but when you look at the integrated index that I'm looking at on my screen, you can see that tropical cyclone activity is at or near its lowest values measured.
So in a matter of time, we'll have like 10 minutes left. Mike, I'd like you to jump back in if you would.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, again, the National Academy of Sciences in the United States and all over the world have said that a warming planet will lead to larger storms of the sort we've seen with Sandy. The Travelers Insurance Company, Allstate, Munich Re, all the major insurers in the world say that we're seeing bigger hurricanes linked to global warming. So
we aren't.
Dr. Michaels,
the truth.
Patrick, excuse me, we have one at a time on this show.
Dr. Michaels is funded by the oil and
coal
industry. He takes money from the fossil fuel industry. And honestly, Dr. Michaels, 10 years ago, you were saying that global warming wasn't even happening. You can Google Dr. Patrick Michaels, global warming. Go back to 1990, 1995. You'll see that he said global warming is not happening.
Now, I should point out.
One at a time.
Dr. Michaels now.
But the satellite record showed no warming.
Gentlemen.
The radios on.
Dr. Michaels, we have one at a time on the show. You had a long time to say what you were saying. Mike Tidwell is talking now. Mike?
So, your listeners should consider the source. Patrick Michaels, who you've invited on your show to talk about Hurricane Sandy, is very well known to be funded by the fossil fuel industry. And I just want to stress that. I'm telling you, a month ago, Mark, I live in Maryland, in Montgomery County. I got a note from Travelers Insurance Company, my homeowner's insurance company. that said explicitly, we are raising your rates because extreme weather is accelerating due to climate change. Travelers, why would they be politically motivated? Why would they lie about this? So I trust the insurance companies who are in the business of knowing what's going on with the climate. And there's an overwhelming scientific data from MIT, on and on, from federal agencies showing that we have sea surface temperatures rising, that this is a threat in terms of more powerful Atlantic storms, and that the consequences are and will continue to be felt from Baltimore all the way to Maine.
Dr. Michaels, go ahead, then we'll go back to Mike.
Yeah, well, my sole employer is the Cato Institute, and I think about 95% of Cato's funding is from private individuals.
With all due respect, Dr. Michaels, I've done a lot of studies about who funds what left and right, and a lot of the money that comes to Cato comes from people who are tied to the oil industry. That's just real.
We don't want to debate that here because you got it wrong.
I don't.
But the fact of the matter is, okay, let's take a look at some of the assertions that were made by Mr. Tidwell. Talk about increasing extremes. Well, in geophysical research letters, there's a paper that just came out. It shows that global rainfall variability, which is, you know, people say it's getting more extreme, et cetera. Global rainfall variability is actually declining significantly, counter to what is said in the climate models. A couple of weeks ago, there was yet another paper on Antarctic ice, which corrected the satellite for an error that's made in its gravitational sensing, which is how it tells whether the ice is growing or thinning. And Antarctica now looks like it's pretty much either neutral or maybe actually slightly gaining ice, because what was forecast by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which I've been an active member, turns out to be correct. Antarctica is forecast to gain ice in the 21st century, not lose ice, because the slight warming of the Southern Ocean results in more snow, which precipitates onto the continent, and the ice cover actually increases. The Antarctic Peninsula loses ice because it's way out there in the warm part of the ocean, but the continent itself actually gains. So the problem is that this science is a lot more complicated. And by the way, I don't trust insurance companies. You know, the reinsurers have been trying, have been fudging numbers all over the place on hurricane and weather-related damage. So if you actually adjust them for population changes, property value changes along beachfront areas, et cetera, you get no change whatsoever. Get Roger Pilkey Jr. from the University of Colorado on your show, and he will do anything on that.
Okay, one at a time. Mike, go ahead.
I just have to say, for your listeners who are listening, many of you who got the same traveler's insurance notice in the mail, scientifically referenced in terms of extreme weather increasing, I think that the story is last Hurricane Sandy and all the details of that in terms of climate change. The real story is Patrick Michaels and the deniers of global warming who are funded by the oil and coal industry. You notice that Dr. Michaels did not deny when I said 10, 15 years ago, he was saying global warming wasn't happening. Anybody can look it up. He's not denying that. He was wrong about that 10 and 15 years ago. He's wrong now as he talks about obscure scientific data to try to confuse. No wonder Americans are confused about global warming. It's because of scientists, quote-unquote, like Dr. Michaels, who profit, get paid by the coal and oil industries who are driving climate change, and come on shows like this and talk the way they do. It's no wonder Americans are confused. And I do trust insurance companies. They have to compete. They have to compete against each other. They have to get their predictions right in order to have affordable insurance and competitive insurance for people like us who have to buy it. Why would they lie? Usually the Cato Institute celebrates private enterprise, promotes private entrepreneurship, and yet Dr. Michaels of Cato is saying he doesn't trust these corporations. Well, I do trust them, and I do believe in the market system, and I think it's a market failure that we haven't put a price on carbon to reflect the influence that carbon fuels have on our climate. This is a external cost, and I think that, you know, the great writer and activist Bill McKibben wrote today that we ought to stop naming these Atlantic hurricanes after people and start naming them after the companies that create them, like ExxonMobil and Peabody Coal and the people who pay Dr. Michaels. ExxonMobil is creating this extreme weather. It's not natural, it's unnatural, and it's fossil fuels that are driving what we're seeing.
So we have just actually a few minutes left here, and we're going to come back to this later in the week to continue our conversations about climate change and our weather and what's fueling what. Very quick, Patrick Michaels, before we go back to Mike Tidwell and move on.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I am not paid by the fossil fuel industry, Mike. And by the way, when you go back to 1990, which is when I would say there was strong evidence for no warming, we have three different ways of taking the temperature. One is by satellite, which showed no warming. The other one is by weather balloons, which showed no warming. And the third one was the odd person out, if you will. That was the surface temperature record, which showed warming. So you would make the argument that the balance of the data suggested in the early 1990s that there was probably something wrong with the odd man out record, seen as people knew it had some problems with urban heat islands, etc. Now, since then, it was found that the satellite was drifting, and the radiosonde, that's the weather balloon data, has been adjusted for noise-to-signal ratio in the tropics, and now everything is pretty much in agreement, except that the warming rate is at the low end, I said the low end, of the range projected by the United Nations for their mid-range emission scenarios, and our computer models, the way they work, seem to say that once warming is established, it takes place at a constant rate. So nature is kind of declaring herself here, with a relatively modest warming. And in the long run, you know, we're going to adapt to it. Our technologies are going to change. And people are going to make money adapting to and creating a cleaner world.
So, and Mike, I'm just curious about how you would kind of one of the things I was reading about, we have to end here in like 2 minutes, but one of the things I was reading about from Climate Central is about that when we talked about the cold air coming through and meeting Sandy, that there are some arguments people are making that has a lot to do with the ice melt in the Arctic, which are the most severe we've seen ever.
Yeah, and I just want to say that Patrick Michaels is flat out lying on your show when he says he's not paid by, he hasn't received money from the fossil fuel industry. So just want to state that. Clearly, there's growing evidence that the vanishing ice cover in the Arctic, triggered by climate change, which is triggered by our use of fossil fuels, is creating really, really erratic weather patterns, high and low pressure systems that may have played a role in Hurricane Sandy. We won't know. We will know soon. I mean, climate scientists will immediately begin processing all the data and can quickly piece together many of the many causes of this hurricane, in addition to the warming oceans and more moisture in the air caused by climate change. So the bottom line is Marylanders know that we've seen more extreme weather, we've seen more extreme precipitation. We had a record warm summer. Half the counties in America were declared in drought at one point this summer. The Greenland ice sheet is melting. These are all reasons to be alarmed and to take every new episode of extreme weather as further evidence for a situation that we need to fix. And how do we fix this? We need to stop burning the oil, coal, and natural gas that's driving the warming and switch to more efficient Maryland-made wind and solar and high-efficiency appliances and cars.
Mike Tidwell is director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, and Patrick Michaels is senior fellow of the Environmental Studies at the Cato Institute. I want to thank both of you for being with us, and we look forward to getting all back on very soon. Thank you so much. So it's been an interesting conversation. We'll have more of that soon, and we are going to take a very brief break here and come right back as we talk to Rob Gould of BG&E. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Before we jump into our conversation with Paul Tough, we are going to talk with Robert Gould, of course, spokesman for BG&E Constellation, vice president of that company. And Rob, welcome. Good to have you back with us. Rob there? Hi, Rob. Hey, Rob, you there? Rob?
Mark?
Hey, Rob, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I've been talking. I apologize.
No, it's not your fault. That wasn't on your end, I'm sure. So tell us what the situation is in the region here, and how many people without power, and where are we with the efforts to return people to power?
We actually have restored about 70,000 customers today, and that even more so since we started this. We're working the entire area, balanced restoration. Harper County and Anne Arundel certainly took the brunt of it, and I think that's largely due to the location of the eye passing over the state line, Maryland-Delaware line for Harper County, and of course, being closer to the water, Anne Arundel took a brunt, as did some parts of Baltimore County. So we're out there. We've been out there since 1:30 this morning with the bucket trucks. We were able to get a waiver, and not a waiver, but we were able to stand down the restriction on having the bucket trucks out. And we've been out in earnest throughout the day, and we'll continue to work through the night. We usually bed most of our folks down overnight. They work 12 to 16-hour shifts, and then we bed them down because they're far more effective, and it's frankly much safer to work in the daylight hours. And we'll go at it again tomorrow. But we're not going to be putting out a global estimated time of restoration until probably tomorrow afternoon or Thursday. We really need about a 24 to 48-hour period after the storm passes to get out and take a look at the damage and assess it. Parallel pathing, though, of course, restoration. So we're making progress. Like I said, 70,000 today at least, and we'll continue to work the restoration.
So a couple of quick questions. I mean, I guess you're a little ahead of the game maybe because the storm didn't hit Baltimore, at least the Baltimore region, as hard as we expected.
Well, it didn't, but that doesn't mean that we're content. We're fortunate, let's be very, very clear. We planned for a very catastrophic event. We typically will call in about 1,000 out-of-state utility workers. We put the call out for 3,000, so we much more than doubled the call. And then as it relates to staging areas, just to give you a sense, we have 4 staging areas in the area. This is where the crews are fed. This is where the laundry takes place. We have those at M&T Bank Stadium, Ripken Stadium, Timonium Fairgrounds, and also down at BWI, and a 5th that we're going to open in Prince George's County at Six Flags in Largo. We took this very seriously, and frankly, just by the grace of God, that we didn't get hit much like our colleagues are to the north. If it had come up the bay like we thought it was going to be back on Saturday, I believe it was, we would be looking at images of Baltimore similar to what we're seeing in New York today.
So, and how many people are still out of power, and when do you expect that? That will be cleared up?
So we've got about 146, I believe, 146,000 at last count. We really haven't said, Mark, when the restoration will be complete because we're still in the assessment phase of the damage. We really need that time, that 24 to 48-hour period, to get out and actually see what exactly has happened, what the damage is. It's one thing to have low numbers relative to what you expected. It's another thing to be able to say your equipment has withstood the wrath of the storm. And the wind and the damage that was out there is pretty bad. But we need to understand exactly where the damage is, what type of damage it is, before we can give any kind of estimate. And even then, given recent history, we're going to be very judicious in the type of information we put out to customers about their own individual outage and the restoration time. And very simply, if we don't have high confidence, a high degree of confidence that what we're telling our customers we can stand behind, we're not going to put it out there. It's very akin to a surgeon opening up a patient. We can look at a problem from the outside and say we think it'll take X amount of hours or one day. Until you open the patient up and you get in there and see exactly what's wrong with in this case, the feeder system or the actual neighborhoods and the infrastructure, we would be simply failing our customers by trying to give them something we just can't stand behind.
This has been, I really appreciate you taking up our listeners as you usually do, Robert Gould, and we'll come back to the next couple of days and see where we are, and when you have time for a little longer conversation to take people's questions. I appreciate you taking the time, and good luck out there.
Will do, Mark, and look forward to being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rob Gould from Constellation BG&E. I hope that your power is coming on fast. And if you're listening to us on the internet, if you're in your car, you can join us. If you're out of the city and listening to us from New York City, well, I hope you can join us by internet. I hope you all are safe up there as well.